For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Live Atlanta Sports Talk on the weekends.
That's right, for the whole weekend.
Back to more Chris Goforth
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth hanging out on this Sunday afternoon. NFL preseason games starting this week. We'll get to our five Falcons questions. Joe Patrick from here at 92.9 The Game. He's going to join us in about 20 minutes. Then we'll have our NFL notebook. We'll get you caught up on some news and notes from around the league before the end of this hour. Quick update on the Braves. It's now 4-0, top of the fifth, with the Braves leading the Mets against 4-0. Matt Olson with a three-run homer for the Braves back in the fourth inning. And then Braves also scored, looks like, on a wild pitch as well. So to make it, that's how it got to that 4-0 mark. All of the scoring for Atlanta came in the fourth inning. But again, 4-0, top of the fifth. We'll do our best to keep you updated on that. It's good to see Matt Olson hit the home run. That is number 15 for him. It'd be good if he can get on track here in the second half of the season. All right, it's time for our five Falcons questions. We do it every week. Let's turn it over to Dom, and he has them teed up for this week.
Yes, I do, sir. So, obviously, you know, we have been doing a lot of live shows from training camp. You know, Falcons had their first open practice and stuff that fans were able to go to. So, obviously, we played some sounds from training camp earlier that we heard, you know, from guys on the team, Grady Jarrett, stuff like that. My question to you, what have you heard from training camp so far that has you encouraged about this upcoming season?
Hey, real quick, I meant to ask you this before. Did you get a chance to go out to Buford last night?
I did not.
I didn't either.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't feeling, I mean, I'm dealing with whatever this is that's going on, and yeah, wasn't feeling great yesterday, so elected to just stay in last night.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I am most encouraged about, I think, is all the talk about the quarterbacks. You know, and I think after what we've seen on the field after the last 2 years, the idea of Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix playing well, I don't care if it's just helmet and shorts. That makes me happy, because if I think – you know, if the Falcons can get just adequate quarterback play, they're going to be okay. You know, if they had adequate quarterback play the last 2 years, the story of Arthur Smith's tenure here would be a lot different. So, yeah, I'm going to be encouraged about anything good that comes out about the quarterbacks. I think it was in D-Led's article this morning in the AJC about, you know, Kirk Cousins and Kyle Pitts developing some chemistry. I love to hear that, too, because – you know, I think we've all sat here for the last 2 years and gone, where is Kyle Pitts? Why is he not a red zone target? Why are the numbers not better for Kyle Pitts? Maybe injury has something to do with that, but I also feel like maybe play calling, play design might have been an issue. Hopefully that's not going to be the case with him. And also, too, quarterback play. Again, I think a lot of the problems that you point to with the Falcons offensively, you know, the lack of production out of Kyle Pitts, I think a lot of that, you know, the turnovers, a lot of it goes back to the quarterback play. And if you can get that fixed and get that under control, then, man, I think it makes life a whole lot better the rest of the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously the Falcons have not had a good quarterback play the last 2 years. So,
You think about it, really three. Because Matt Ryan's last year here, and I don't think that was all Matt's fault, but remember, that was the year the offensive line was so porous.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't really give him much of a chance. And so it's really been three straight years with lackluster quarterback play. And again, I don't put that on Matt Ryan, because I don't necessarily think that was his fault that year. But It's been a while since we've seen competent quarterback play around here.
Yeah, and now, hey, you got two on the roster that you feel pretty good about. Next question. Obviously, still dealing with training camp, just asked if you heard anything that made you encouraged. Have you heard anything that maybe has you a bit concerned?
You know, I think it's so early in camp. Like, you know, we've had, what, three practices so far? I mean, I was a little encouraged last night that Clark Phillips had an interception, and it's weird because, you know, you talk about, well, I'm glad to hear the quarterbacks are doing well, but then you also look at this roster and you go, boy, there's some glaring holes at corner. How much of that is the quarterbacks playing well, and then how much of that is the Falcons being bad opposite AJ at that other corner? As much as I want to hear good things about the quarterbacks, I want to hear good things about the cornerbacks as well, especially between now and September, because I still feel, and we've talked about it here all summer, that's the biggest question mark for me on this team. What does that? Yeah, you know, I'm not worried so much about safety. Richie Grant, DeMarco Hellams, they're going to figure it out at that other safety spot. This opposite corner spot off of Terrell, if you don't, you know, and clearly, I guess at least at this point, Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris feel like, and Jimmy Lake, the defensive coordinator, they feel like the guys they've got are enough. Either that or they can't afford to add those free agent corners, because there's a couple of guys that are out there and have been out there now for a couple of weeks. Falcons hadn't made a move on anybody, so I think they're going to try to see if they can figure it out between Hughes and Phillips. Hopefully they can, but that's what I would like to hear more from. That's the position that has me the most concerned.
Yeah, I think most people would agree. I agree there. That cornerback position next to AJ has to get figured out, so we'll see how that plays out. We spoke about the two quarterbacks earlier. One of them is, of course, Michael Penix Jr. My question for you is, how much will we see Michael Penix Jr. in that first preseason game in Miami?
I'm going to say a half. I mean, Kirk Cousins is not going to play in this preseason, so I think it's a great opportunity to give Penix some extended time. You've still got the second half for the other guys. Taylor Heinicke can go the third quarter. John Paddock can play in the fourth. I would actually be good with that for the first two preseason games, and then maybe that third game. And it sucks because the third game here is going to be the one that's actually here in Atlanta. It'd be nice to be able to see Michael Penix in person, but you know, I understand how the game gets played, but you let Heinicke have the first half and let Paddock have the second half. And I think there's a good chance that, you know, it plays out this way. Right now, you've only got the four quarterbacks. I think we know who the three are going to be. And maybe, you know, maybe John Paddock becomes that guy that they stash on the practice squad. But I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't get a long look at Michael Penix right now in the preseason.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to get a heavy, heavy, heavy dose of Michael Penix Jr. I wouldn't be surprised if he takes over 50 or 60% of all of the snaps for all of the preseason games.
That'd be great. Again, I'd like to see him in person. Mm-hmm. So I would like to think that final preseason game, even if he just does a drive or two,
yeah,
you know, let him have a series or two in front of the home fans. I think that would be great. We'll see. We don't know how Raheem Morris is going to approach this. I hope that we do. I understand Kirk Cousins not playing. It makes sense. I get it. I hope we don't get into a situation like we did with Arthur Smith where we don't see the starters at all.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. Desmond needed to be out there. We definitely want to see Michael Penix out there.
Get exactly.
A look and give the fans some service. Let them play a quarter or something in that third game when we can see them. All right. Next question here. So obviously Michael Penix is going to be throwing to a couple of people. We know who wide receiver number one is going to be. There's talks about Kyle Pitts playing some more wide receiver. Maybe that makes him a de facto wide receiver two. Who will be wide receiver three on this team?
So, you know, I'm not going to include Pitts in the conversation here, but it's Drake London, it's Darnell Mooney, and it's Ray McCloud. That was in D-Led's article this morning in the AJC, but I keep seeing buzz and hearing buzz around Rondale Moore that went all the way back to OTAs. So I think he's going to be in that rotation somewhere. Again, as I've said all summer, I like this wide receiver group that the Falcons have. I think this group is better than what they're being given credit for. I think the question that I have is how many wide receivers do they keep when the final cuts are made? And I always caution this every year. There's two things about the NFL every year. Number one is an overreaction in week one. If the Falcons win or they lose in week one versus the Steelers, everybody's going to overreact. Always, always, always. It's been that way forever. Either this is the greatest team in the history of sports or these guys couldn't beat a middle school team. Either way, try not to overreact over week one, after week one. And the other thing is be aware of those preseason Hall of Famers. And I enjoy the preseason, always have. I think partially because I like college football so much. I like seeing where so many of those guys end up in NFL camps and who can make it and who doesn't. But every year, you watch the Falcons preseason, and there's going to be a guy, and I don't know who it's going to be yet, but somebody is going to have a great preseason and won't make the roster. I think the four guys we mentioned make it, Kadarrell Hodge. I really think Hodge is a bubble guy. Special teams has kind of been his niche in his career. He doesn't have the same kind of speed that the rest of the guys in that position group have. I think Casey Washington is a guy the Falcons invested a draft pick in, so he's probably got a chance to stick at least on the practice squad. And then you've got a couple of guys there that have been on the bubble in Josh Ali, Chris Blair. Blair's actually been on the game day roster some the last couple of years. I would think he's got a chance. Is seven going to be the number? You know, they're not going to keep the same number of tight ends that Arthur Smith did, so maybe you're able to scoop up an extra wide receiver.
That's a good point, good point. And last question here before we get out. So we talked about some of the younger guys. Obviously, we talked about Penix, who's a rookie. I want to talk about some of the veteran players. And my question to you is, which veteran needs to have the best showing in training camp?
Well, I can't limit this to just one, but Kadarrell Hodge is on the list. Again, I think the makeup of this wide receiver room has changed. This offense has changed. I'm not sure where he fits in. He's always been a special teams guy. I think that's got to continue for him. The other one is TQ Graham. How much longer are we going to wait? You know, can you really look at him today and say without question that he's a rotational piece on the defensive line? I was all on board with him when he got here, but, you know, we're going into, what is this, year four, year five? With TQ Graham. And then the other guy is Tyler Vrabel, and maybe not a veteran in that grizzled sense that you think about a veteran, but he's a guy that's been around here for a while. Storm Norton played so well last year when he went in. So I think Storm Norton has, when you talk about the backup offensive line positions, Storm Norton has nailed at one of those down. Vrabel struggled last year. So, you know, I don't know how much progress he has made this offseason, but I think he's another guy that you have to really give some thought as to whether or not he's going to be here after this year. Or is he going to be here come September? All right, that's our five Falcons questions. Thanks, Dom, for playing along today and all summer. Joe Patrick, he's our guy here at 92.9 The Game. He has been all over Falcons training camp the last half of this week. He's going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on what he has seen from Falcons training camp. We'll get to it after this. Chris Goforth with you. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's Weekend Sports in the ATL.
With Chris Goforth.
A weekend warrior.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Let's keep it going this hour, talking Falcons football. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth hanging out on a Sunday. Not going to be long until my man Joe Patrick and I are going to enjoy some of that delicious Mercedes-Benz Stadium macaroni and cheese in the press box before kickoff. It is I mean, it may be the highlight of my game.
I don't know if there's illegal substances in that macaroni and cheese or what, but I mean, it is the best stuff. And it's funny that you mentioned it, because when you said that, I knew you were going to identify some food there, and I was in my head thinking the macaroni, and everybody's got on their mind, of course.
Listen, I just go and just heap the plate full of macaroni. I mean, it's just I hit my carb limit for the week by 115 on a Sunday. Joe Patrick, he is our Falcons reporter here on 92.9 The Game, kind enough to hang out with us. Joe, you've been at camp. What's different with Raheem Morris in charge?
Oh my gosh! What is not different? It feels like there's just so much that's changed. But I think that, Chris, the obvious answer here, but it really is the biggest change, is obviously a quarterback. And it's not. I think, you know, Kirk Cousins comes in and you kind of expect him to be more accurate, and just a better passer than Desmond Ridder was or Marcus Mariota was, and that's obviously true. But I think the thing that I'm like kind of gleaning that's been more impactful maybe than anything so far, at least to this point, when you're just kind of preparing, getting the team ready to go, is just the way that Kirk Cousins is able to kind of be an executive for the players, and obviously just like the offense, and, you know, getting them ready. First of all, just meeting with guys, just, you know, sharing time with them to have some shared experiences and building those bonds, and then, you know, putting their heads together and making sure that they've got the plays down and his cadences down and all the little details that go into highly effective offenses. You know, the Kyle Shanahan's, the Sean McVay's, the reason those offenses are the best in the league are not because they're simple and easy to understand and all that. You know, they're very complex and difficult. But when you have a quarterback that can make life easier for everybody else, I think that's when you really find the magic. And I really think that that's what Kirk Cousins is bringing to this team. And I think it exudes the confidence from that exudes not just to the players around him, but even throughout the building, Chris. I just think that, you know, everybody at Flowery Branch is so excited for what's on the horizon for this team and what is a very winnable division. And hopefully they can make their first playoff appearance and have their first playoff game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Since it was built.
All right. You talked about Kirk Cousins. What about Michael Penix? Give me a little analysis there of what you've seen from him.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, if the starting quarterback position was determined by, you know, who could throw the tightest spiral and the farthest and just who, you know, what does the ball look like coming out of the hand? Michael Penix would win that job because, I mean, sometimes it looks like it's coming out of a jugs machine, the way it just kind of spins out of his hand. And that's really fun to watch in and of itself. So I got to say, as somebody who stands around and watches practice, it is fun to watch Penix throw the ball. We got to see him unleash one, really uncork one, not yesterday, but the day before. It was just a place perfectly. Unfortunately, Rondale Moore dropped the pass, but you got to think that if he's going to make those plays, then more often than not, the Falcons are going to be in very happy campers because they will have very positive games. But there's still so much that he has to learn, and he's still working with the rookies on the side, on not the side field, but kind of the second field when they've got the ones going on one field and the twos going on the other. And so I think it's been a very productive time, though, for him. I certainly did not expect for him to take quite as many reps as he's been taking. I thought, you know, Taylor Heinicke would at least get some reps, but he's hardly gotten any reps, which I think is good to see. I think that they're really trying to ramp up Michael Penix, and I think he's going to go into the season with as the clear-cut backup at this point.
Joe Patrick, 92.9 The Game. Joe's hanging with us here as we talk a little Falcons football. All right, so Kirk Cousins is not going to play in the preseason. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
Dom and I just talked about this a minute ago, Joe. How much do we see Michael Penix through this preseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think based off of what we're seeing so far, I would expect him to play the majority of these games because, frankly, like Taylor Heinicke took the first reps that I can remember last night at the very end of the practice where I think he got three reps. And I think one of them was an interception. The other should have been an interception. And, you know, it's Taylor Heinicke. And I got to say, he spoke to us after, and he's one of the best ones to talk to on this team because he will not, like, kind of be guarded at all. He'll tell you exactly. And somebody asked him, you know, what do you think when the Falcons took, you know, a quarterback and they already signed Kirk Cousins? And he said, oh, I saw the writing on the wall, but I've seen the writing on the wall my whole career, you know, and that's just, so he just takes it in stride. But I really do think that we're going to see probably like three quarters of Michael Penix, potentially at least a half, I would say, just based off of the fact that none of these other quarterbacks are getting any reps. And if Kirk Cousins isn't going to play, you know, we'll see how things develop over the next, you know, couple weeks as they gear up towards it. But seems like they want to get him as many, many reps as possible.
What do you see Rondale Moore, what's his role in this offense going to be?
Yeah, it's really interesting because when Raheem Morris spoke at owners meetings, which was right after they had acquired Moore, he kind of pointed him out as a guy that they thought that could be a guy that does a lot of motion and stuff in the underneath where he can kind of catch the ball on drags and whatnot or hitches or screens and then get a lot of yards after the catch, which I'm sure is the plan for him, or I don't think Raheem Morris would have said that if it's not. While Darnell Mooney is the guy who kind of stretches the field, and then you've got Pitts and London who are more your intermediate receivers. But, Rondale Moore's been playing a lot with the twos. Like when they are split, when the team is split up into two fields, Rondale Moore's typically been playing on that second field, and I don't know if that's just to get, again, kind of get him more reps over the course of the camp, but it's been Ray McLeod, actually, who has kind of grabbed a hold of the third wide receiver role, so to speak. And I do think that he is essentially competing with Rondale Moore for those opportunities. But, and I'm sure both of them will play. But right now it seems like Ray McLeod is the guy that they've really identified as someone who can help them. He's made some big plays already in training camp, obviously catching like a 50-yard touchdown pass from Kirk Cousins a couple days ago. And he's somebody that Ike Hilliard apparently really identified as someone who he'd worked with in the past in Pittsburgh and thought would be a good asset here. And it's looking like it'll be the most expanded receiving role that Ray McLeod has had in his career, at least since he was in Pittsburgh, since he's been primarily used as a special teams player than his other stops.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, hanging out here on a Sunday with our guy, Joe Patrick. He's been at Falcons training camp all week, and we get Joe's insight on what are you seeing. Nate Landman, he played really well last year. What's this rotation look like at linebacker with Troy Anderson now coming back from an injury?
Yeah, this is also a really interesting dynamic that's developing with this Falcons team. And on this defense, I think there's a lot of questions in general as to how Jimmy Lake's going to scheme this thing up and how they're going to use some of these players, where at the linebacker position, I think it's the perfect example of a spot where, you know, typically nowadays NFL teams are really just running two linebackers for the most part, at least the kind of traditional linebackers like we see with Nate Landman and Caden Ellis and Troy Anderson. And right now it seems like Nate Landman is kind of, I guess you would say he's above Troy Anderson in the depth chart. When the ones go out on defense, it's typically been Landman and Ellis, which obviously they had a great rapport last year. And Nate Landman was a very key figure in leading the Falcons to being the number one rated run defense by Pro Football Focus last year over the course of the season, which I don't think anybody expected. And, you know, he really showed his value in those roles and those circumstances. So he's going to be the guy that is in the game on most first downs, probably most second downs. But I do think that, you know, Jimmy Lake is scheming this thing up so that he can use some of these weapons like Troy Anderson and some of the defensive linemen outside linebackers like Arnold Ebiketie and Braylon Trice, so that they can put them in the best positions possible to succeed and kind of keep them out of the kind of positions where they tend to struggle. So with Troy Anderson, that's in the run game. Same with Arnold Ebiketie, that's also in the run game. And we can talk more about the pass rushers a little bit later, maybe. But I do think that just generally speaking, there is a huge role for Nate Landman in this defense because of the value that he showed that he could provide last year.
Joe, Dom and I talked a few minutes ago about this new kickoff rule that's in place. Let me get your thoughts on it. We heard the cuts from Avery Williams and him talking about it. What do you think the return strategy will be for the Falcons? How will they choose to play this?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's one of the most fascinating things to watch, especially even in the preseason. I've never been more interested to watch kickoffs in preseason, because not just with the way that it's going to look, but obviously the strategy that gets implemented by these guys. And we haven't been able to talk to Marquise Williams yet. I am kind of humored by how I think the secrecy is around by special teams coaches around the league regarding this play, because I have to imagine that special teams coaches, there's a bit of a fraternity there, and they probably share some ideas, over the course of off seasons. They, get together and meetings or phone calls or whatnot and talk about some of this stuff. But I can't imagine that anybody is leaking anything about how they're going to handle some of these kickoff returns, because I think it has the potential to be, a real game changer. And I mean that in the truest sense. Like, it could swing the tenor of any given game if you get one of these returns. We've seen that happen with Cordarrelle Patterson and the Falcons plenty. And, honestly, it's kind of funny because I think Cordarrelle Patterson, that type of returner, could be the kind that is very, very successful. And obviously Cordarrelle Patterson's been successful in the previous way that kickoffs were handled, but I think there's an opportunity for like a more powerful running style to be effective, because it feels like to me, and we haven't really seen this play in action yet at full speed and full pads, but it seems to me like there's the potential for a guy to like break an arm tackle and then find himself with green grass to run into. And, Tyler Allgeier was part of a group of players who were getting reps on kickoff return when the Falcons have just been in the preliminary stages of scrimmaging it in these first couple practices. Now, I don't think that he's not one of the primary guys. The primary guys have been, they've been back there with two returners, with Ray McLeod and Avery Williams. But, they had a group of about eight or nine guys that were pairing up. So maybe they were just experimenting with some bodies, but I wouldn't be surprised, especially considering Tyler Allgeier should generally be pretty rested, considering we expect to see Bijan Robinson getting the majority of the workload out of the backfield. Maybe that's a way the team could utilize him. So I think there's still just a ton of unknowns. And it's funny talking to Avery. I asked him yesterday if he thinks that, this new kickoff rule kind of isn't advantageous for the return team, which is my presumption. He wasn't so sure about it, but I think it's evident that he said, the kickoff, the guy who's doing the kickoffs, Bradley Pinion, he thinks it's a huge advantage for the return team. So I do think it will be an advantage for these guys. And I think we're going to see more kickoff returns than we've ever seen in NFL history. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's going to make the game a lot more exciting and just create a different dynamic.
Joe, I don't think there's a more exciting play in football than a kickoff or a punt, for that matter, that gets a big return or a return for a touchdown. I'm just glad that the NFL is choosing to keep this as a part of the game, because, over the last, 5 to 7, 8 years, it felt like the NFL was trying to figure out how to get rid of it.
Yeah. And you got to give the NFL credit for being willing to experiment as much as they have. And I think it's one of the main reasons why the sport has just not even maintained its dominance in American culture, but really just exploded. It continues to grow in market share. And it's because they're willing to change the rules of the game that makes it for a better spectacle, a better viewing experience. And you compare it to a sport like baseball that unfortunately has really kind of dragged its feet in a lot of respects. And I'm honestly, I consider myself like a traditionalist with a lot of these things. But when you look at something like implementing the pitch clock and how much sooner that could have been implemented, that I think really has just benefited baseball so much, and I'm sure the advertisers as well, that you got to give the NFL credit for experimenting and being willing to, open themselves up. And I'm sure that, they'll go with it this season. Avery kind of joked that, maybe they'll even change the rules midseason and we're going to roll with it, but they're not going to hesitate on, just making whatever adjustments they feel is needed. Obviously to protect the health and safety of the players, which has obviously been an issue with the kickoff return, but also just to make the game more fun and exciting.
Bradley Pinion still going to be the guy to handle kickoffs?
By all accounts, he will be. We haven't gotten a lot into it yet in terms of the special teams work, but yeah, it does seem like he will continue to be the guy who does the kickoffs.
All right, let's talk about that corner position opposite A.J. Terrell. That's my biggest question mark right now. Is that your biggest question mark about this team?
It's one of them. It's that and the pass rush, which was obviously not addressed to the extent that a lot of fans wanted in the draft. But I think that they have an approach there. I think they're going to essentially use Arnold Ebiketie as kind of the same role he had last year, and just hope that he can continue to improve and excel and continue to apply pressure on quarterbacks. And they're just going to kind of use personnel and deploy it in strategic opportunities, as opposed to like getting a guy, just a monster out there who can play all three downs and rush the passer and stop the run and do all that. But I think opposite A.J. Terrell, it's also a really interesting situation developing where you've got an experienced guy in Mike Hughes, and a guy who was a former first-round pick. Let's not forget, kind of battling with a guy like Clark Phillips, who had an interception yesterday at Second Year High School, the first turnover by the defense so far in practice, which I think benefits the, or it's conducive to offensive success when you're not practicing in pads, in my opinion. So good to see him come down with that. And I think that those are the kinds of plays that ultimately will win him the job. But right now it's Mike Hughes' job to lose. And, you know, Mike Hughes last year was deployed almost exclusively as a slot corner. And we'll see if he has more success on the outside, where, frankly, his past performance has indicated he does have more success.
Is that other cornerback starter on the roster right now?
Yes, as of right now, but I would not be surprised to see this team actually make a move midseason to make a trade, to add a player, whether that be a corner or potentially a pass rusher. We saw them actually try very hard to push for Montez Sweat last year, where there was reportedly a deal agreed between the Falcons and the Washington that he was getting traded from, until the Bears swooped in and just basically had a better pick to offer the Commanders and the Falcons did, so the Bears got him. But that to me showed that Terry Fontenot is not going to be shy in terms of making a move if he feels like the team needs it, because I think this team absolutely sees themselves in like a winning window where they feel like they've got, especially on offense, a team that's good enough to win a championship, and they just got to make sure their defense can kind of be up to par as much as they can be to give the offense a chance to succeed.
Joe Patrick, you can hear him all week here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He's back at Falcons training camp all week long. Joe, appreciate the time. As always, we'll look forward to catching up with you again, man. See you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Chris. Appreciate it.
Joe Patrick, you can find him right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. How about those Braves, huh? Arcia with a homer now. Braves have a 5-0 lead over the Mets, top of the seventh. It's good to see. It's good to see. The guys that I had to be critical of early on, Matt Olson's homer, drove in three. Arcia with a solo shot today, 5-0. Braves with the lead over the Mets. That's good. We'll get to our NFL notebook to close out this hour. We'll do that. We'll hear from Trevor Lawrence, talk about Jordan Love, Tua. Good day to get paid if you're or a good week, I guess, to get paid if you're an NFL quarterback. We'll get to that as we continue on. Chris Goforth hanging out here, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Here we go.
Back to more Chris Goforth.
You will be shocked.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth in on this Sunday. Glad to be hanging out with you as we get set to wrap up the weekend, get another week started off. We got football this week, though. That's a good thing. Hall of Fame game coming up on Thursday night. It's time to get a look at our NFL notebook now. Before we let's go ahead and get into it. I do have one other thing that I want to get to, but maybe we'll save that. We'll get into it next hour. A little thought on baseball that I wanted to put out there, but we'll hold on to that. We'll go ahead and continue on with our look around the National Football League. Touch on some of the big stories, not just from today, but from the past week. Since we've been talking Falcons, let's stay in the NFC South. Let's go to Tampa, and let's hear from Todd Bowles. Randy Gregory did not report to training camp. This comes from Jenna Lane on ESPN. This is Bucks head coach Todd Bowles.
We're going to talk about the player that's here. He's not here. We'll deal with that internally. And obviously, he's on the did not report list. And we'll go from there.
Do you have any indication, though, if he's going to be here?
I don't speculate on anything.
So Gregory signed a one-year, $3 million deal in April. And, I mean, obviously, the guys, he's had all kinds of problems since he's been in the league. As a matter of fact, right now he's got a lawsuit filed, I think, against the league and the Denver Broncos. So it does not appear that he is going to play this year, or at least not in Tampa. The Falcons take on the Jaguars in that final preseason game. It's the only preseason home game, by the way, for the Falcons this year. We've talked about it off and on over the summer about the Jags, because their owner, Shad Khan, he's been very outspoken about what happened last season, called it an organizational failure, kind of the way they collapsed over the course of the year. He has not not been shy at all about his expectations for the Jaguars this year. Here's Trevor Lawrence on the expectations that the owner has placed on Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, it shows the belief that he has in us, and obviously that feels really good as players to have that from the owner and from the organization. And talked to us as a team the other night, and obviously won't go into everything he said, but just, you know, the expectations are high, and they should be around here, especially when he's putting, you know, his money, his time, all these things behind it and backing it and really putting a lot into it. He has high expectations for us. We have high expectations for ourselves, and we expect to win. And time's now. You know, we've kind of been we've been lingering around a little bit the last couple of years, but this is our opportunity. We need to take advantage of it.
Ryan Nielsen, by the way, who was the Falcons defensive coordinator last year, that I mean, he did a good job here last year. I thought he is, if you've forgotten or if you missed the move from earlier in the year, he's now the defensive coordinator in Jacksonville. Let's stay with the quarterbacks here for a second. Here's Caleb Williams. He's the number one pick, of course, in this year's NFL draft. He was asked about embracing the expectations of being the number one overall pick. Here's Caleb Williams.
I mean, I've had rough days. I expect myself to go out there. I think I'm the toughest on myself. I go out there and I'll mess up a play. I've thrown a pick in mini camp and things like that. Being tough on myself, but also having an understanding of you know where we are and where I am, and you know the progression. Like I said before, is key. And you know those bad times. It's not a time to have self-doubt. That's just a waste of time. It's a time to, you know, keep growing, keep progressing, and keep believing in yourself.
So the story is out that the Bears pulled Montez Sweat out of practice yesterday. He apparently has hit Williams in practice the last 2 days. Now, that's a big no-no. You don't hit the quarterback. He hit his arm yesterday trying to knock the ball out while Williams was raring back to throw, and the Bears pulled him out and made him sit. Last little bit of audio we have come from Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni. There's been some questions about his relationship with Jalen Hurts. I think Hurts had made some comments about, you know, being on the same page, which I guess alludes to the fact that maybe they weren't on the same page last year. You know, the Eagles had a horrible finish after a 10-1 start last year. Sirianni, obviously, he's going to downplay it. Hurts did the same thing when he met with the media. This is what Nick Sirianni had to say. This is from Sports Radio 94 WIP in Philadelphia.
And judge your relationships on is your personal interactions with people, not any report that comes out. And you know, Jalen and I's relationship is good. It's again, you just can judge it based off of what your personal interactions are. And so when you hear a report like that, you don't put much stock into it because, quite frankly, not everybody sees that. So I'm just so excited for him and I to get into our fourth year together. We've done some pretty special things, and I'm really excited for him. He's worked so hard at his game. I'm excited for him to be able to get back out here today and have a good practice today. And just looking forward to continuing to work with him and continue to build on the special things that we've done.
That's Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni. All right, last week, it was a good week to be a quarterback. When you're a starting quarterback and you're not on the fringe, and by fringe, I mean there's a question about whether or not you keep your job. You know, is the team looking to bring somebody in to compete with you? You're a bridge guy, just keeping the seat warm until the next guy. That's a fringe quarterback for me. If you're not on the fringe, a starting quarterback who has his position locked up, when it's time for you to get paid, you're going to cash a check. Packers gave Jordan Love 4 years, $220 million this week. That is including, by the way, a $75 million signing bonus. That ties him with Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow at $55 million per year. Think about Jordan Love for a second. The guy sat 3 years behind Aaron Rodgers. Last year, he was a little iffy to start the season. Now, second half of the year, he was fantastic. I mean, what was something like, 18 touchdown passes and one interception or something to end the year? I mean, it was tremendous. I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but they were unreal. But again, he's only had one really productive year, and actually, if we want to look at it, he's had half of a really productive year. Tua signed the richest deal in Dolphins history, $212.4 million over 4 years. He's going to make $53.1 million per year. $167 million of that was guaranteed. Dan Marino, for his career, by the way, only made $51 million. Now, you adjust those numbers for inflation. Dan Marino did okay. No, nobody's feeling sorry for Dan Marino. Miami, though, this comes from ESPN.com, the only team in the NFL with three skill players making at least $70 million guaranteed. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Tua combined for $310.8 million in guaranteed money. That's the third most in the league. I guess Dak Prescott of the Cowboys is the next guy to sign. If you believe what's out there, Dak is asking for $60 million. Jerry Jones said yesterday he thinks a deal will get done. Is Dak going to get $60 million? I don't know. I mean, he's going to be in that. He's going to be in that ballpark. I mean, $55 million, like Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence is getting. Maybe he gets $56, $57 million. But he's going to get paid. So the lesson to take from all of this is that if you have a son, get him in the yard right now with a sack of footballs and get him throwing as much as you can. Maybe find a quarterback coach. There is a reason why there is so much money to be made in being a private quarterback coach, because there is if you can get there, heck, we can't even talk about the money these guys are making in college now. I mean, what the kid at Nico at Tennessee, what did he get? Like a guaranteed, was it $6 million, $8 million, whatever that was? Carson Beck's driving a Lamborghini in Athens? I mean, it's not bad. It's not a bad way to go, guys. Being a quarterback. All right, last thing here to wrap up our NFL notebook for the week. The NFL has decided to reverse its decision on guardian caps. And if you've ever watched a practice at any level now, you see college practice, you see a high school practice, you'll see these guys with guardian caps on. They used to look, when these things first came out, they look like you're wearing a big marshmallow on your helmet. The look has gotten a little more sleek now, but the NFL has come out and said that you can wear guardian caps in games. I think I was watching the NFL Network this week. They were showing some stuff from Chargers camp, and some of the guys in Chargers camp were actually wearing the guardian cap, and it looked like the actual helmet. I mean, it had the logo on the side and all of that kind of stuff. Geno Smith of the Seahawks tells ProFootballTalk.com that he is considering wearing a guardian cap this year. I think we're going to see it. I think we're going to see a lot more of it going forward. And if the NFL gets their way and we end up going to a, I don't know, where are we going? 18 games?
Yep.
18-game regular season? 19-game regular season? 20-game regular season? Wherever this thing ends up at, player safety is going to be a bigger deal. I think you're going to see more and more guardian caps out there. But
you don't want to be the first guy to do it, though. You know, the first guy is going to get so much hell from his teammates, from opponents. Like, really, you got to wear that? Soft.
First time I ever saw it was at the high school level. I mean, and I'm sure it had been around other places. First time I ever saw it in person was at a high school practice, and it was with a couple of kids that had had concussions and had come out of concussion protocol, so they were able to return back to play. But, you know, they didn't wear them on game day. They would go through pregame drills with them on, but when they came back out of the locker room, you know, for the kickoff, the kids left them in the locker room. So didn't see them wear them in a game. But now I have been to some scrimmages at the high school level where you see it quite. I mean, it's becoming more and more common than what it was. Like I say, first time I saw it was, I don't know, what, 10 years ago? So it's become a lot more common now over the last decade. Our guy Dave Cohen, he is the play-by-play voice of the Georgia State Panthers. Dave's going to join us. We'll talk a little college football, talk a little bit about those Georgia State Panthers. We'll get to that coming up in just a minute. Dave and I both share a love of the band Kiss. So he and I, we probably could have done the entire show together just talking Kiss, but we spared you that. Instead, we talk a little football, get Dave's thoughts on what's going on around around college sports as well, because we talk about the changes in the NFL this year. Man, there's a bunch of changes happening in college football, too. We'll get his thoughts on that and a lot more. Stay with us. Chris Goforth in on this Sunday, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back to more Chris Goforth.
You will be shocked.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth in on this Sunday. Glad to be hanging out with you as we get set to wrap up the weekend, get another week started off. We got football this week, though. That's a good thing. Hall of Fame game coming up on Thursday night. It's time to get a look at our NFL notebook now. Before we, let's go ahead and get into it. I do have one other thing that I want to get to, but maybe we'll save that. We'll get into it next hour. A little thought on baseball that I wanted to put out there, but we'll hold on to that. We'll go ahead and continue on with our look around the National Football League, touch on some of the big stories, not just from today, but from the past week. Since we've been talking Falcons, let's stay in the NFC South. Let's go to Tampa, and let's hear from Todd Bowles. Randy Gregory did not report to training camp. This comes from Jenna Lane on ESPN. This is Bucks head coach Todd Bowles.
We're going to talk about the player that's here. He's not here. We'll deal with that internally. And obviously, he's on the did not report list. And we'll go from there.
Do you have any indication, though, if he's going to be here?
I don't speculate on anything.
So Gregory signed a one-year, $3 million deal in April. And, I mean, obviously, the guys, he's had all kinds of problems since he's been in the league. As a matter of fact, right now, he's got a lawsuit filed, I think, against the league and the Denver Broncos. So it does not appear that he is going to play this year, or at least not in Tampa. The Falcons take on the Jaguars in that final preseason game. It's the only preseason home game, by the way, for the Falcons this year. We've talked about it off and on over the summer about the Jags, because their owner, Shad Khan, he's been very outspoken about what happened last season, called it an organizational failure, kind of the way they collapsed over the course of the year. He has not been shy at all about his expectations for the Jaguars this year. Here's Trevor Lawrence on the expectations that the owner has placed on Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, it shows the belief that he has in us, and obviously that feels really good as players to have that from the owner and from the organization. And talked to us as a team the other night, and I won't go into everything he said, but just, you know, the expectations are high, and they should be around here, especially when he's putting, you know, his money, his time, all these things behind it and backing it and really putting a lot into it. He has high expectations for us. We have high expectations for ourselves, and we expect to win. And time's now. You know, we've kind of been we've been lingering around a little bit the last couple of years, but this is our opportunity. We need to take advantage of it.
Ryan Nielsen, by the way, who was the Falcons defensive coordinator last year, he did a good job here last year. I thought he is, if you've forgotten or if you missed the move from earlier in the year, he's now the defensive coordinator in Jacksonville. Let's stay with the quarterbacks here for a second. Here's Caleb Williams. He's the number one pick, of course, in this year's NFL draft. He was asked about embracing the expectations of being the number one overall pick. Here's Caleb Williams.
I mean, I've had rough days. I expect myself to go out there. I think I'm the toughest on myself. I go out there and I'll mess up a play. I've thrown a pick in minicamp and things like that. Being tough on myself, but also having an understanding of you know where we are and where I am, and you know the progression. Like I said before, is key. And you know those bad times. It's not a time to have self-doubt. That's just a waste of time. It's a time to, you know, keep growing, keep progressing, and keep believing in yourself.
So the story is out that the Bears pulled Montez Sweat out of practice yesterday. He apparently has hit Williams in practice the last 2 days. Now, that's a big no-no. You don't hit the quarterback. He hit his arm yesterday trying to knock the ball out while Williams was rearing back to throw, and the Bears pulled him out and made him sit. Last little bit of audio we have come from Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni. There's been some questions about his relationship with Jalen Hurts. I think Hurts had made some comments about, you know, being on the same page, which I guess alludes to the fact that maybe they weren't on the same page last year. You know, the Eagles had a horrible finish after a 10-1 start last year. Sirianni, obviously, he's going to downplay it. Hurts did the same thing when he met with the media. This is what Nick Sirianni had to say. This is from Sports Radio 94 WIP in Philadelphia.
And judge your relationships on is your personal interactions with people, not any report that comes out. And, you know, Jalen and I's relationship is good. It's, again, you just can judge it based off of what your personal interactions are. And so when you hear a report like that, you don't put much stock into it because, quite frankly, not everybody sees that. So I'm just so excited for him and I to get into our fourth year together. We've done some pretty special things, and I'm really excited for him. He's worked so hard at his game. I'm excited for him to be able to get back out here today and have a good practice today. And, just looking forward to continuing to work with him and continue to build on the special things that we've done.
That's Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni. All right, last week, it was a good week to be a quarterback. When you're a starting quarterback and you're not on the fringe, and by fringe, I mean there's a question about whether or not you keep your job. You know, is the team looking to bring somebody in to compete with you? You're a bridge guy, just keeping the seat warm until the next guy. That's a fringe quarterback for me. If you're not on the fringe, a starting quarterback who has his position locked up, when it's time for you to get paid, you're going to cash a check. Packers gave Jordan Love 4 years, $220 million this week. That is including, by the way, a $75 million signing bonus. That ties him with Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow at $55 million per year. Think about Jordan Love for a second. The guy sat 3 years behind Aaron Rodgers. Last year, he was a little iffy to start the season. Now, second half of the year, he was fantastic. I mean, what was something like, 18 touchdown passes and one interception or something to end the year? I mean, it was tremendous. I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but they were unreal. But again, he's only had one really productive year, and actually, if we want to look at it, he's had half of a really productive year. Tua signed the richest deal in Dolphins history, $212.4 million over 4 years. He's going to make $53.1 million per year. $167 million of that was guaranteed. Dan Marino, for his career, by the way, only made $51 million. Now, you adjust those numbers for inflation. Dan Marino did okay. No, nobody's feeling sorry for Dan Marino. Miami, though, this comes from ESPN.com, the only team in the NFL with three skill players making at least $70 million guaranteed. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Tua combined for $310.8 million in guaranteed money. That's the third most in the league. I guess Dak Prescott of the Cowboys is the next guy to sign. If you believe what's out there, Dak is asking for $60 million. Jerry Jones said yesterday he thinks a deal will get done. Is Dak going to get 60? I don't know. I mean, he's going to be in that ballpark. I mean, $55 million like Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence is getting. Maybe he gets $56, $57 million. But he's going to get paid. So the lesson to take from all of this is that if you have a son, get him in the yard right now with a sack of footballs and get him throwing as much as you can. Maybe find a quarterback coach. There is a reason why there is so much money to be made in being a private quarterback coach, because there is a, if you can get there, heck, we can't even talk about the money these guys are making in college now. I mean, what the kid at Nico at Tennessee, what did he get? Like a guaranteed, was it $6 million, $8 million, whatever that was? Carson Beck's driving a, was it a Lamborghini in Athens? I mean, it's not bad. It's not a bad way to go, guys. Being a quarterback. All right, last thing here to wrap up our NFL notebook for the week. The NFL has decided to reverse its decision on guardian caps. And if you've ever watched a practice at any level now, you see college practice, you see a high school practice, you'll see these guys with guardian caps on. They used to look, when these things first came out, they look like a, like you're wearing a big marshmallow on your helmet. The look has gotten a little more sleek now, but the NFL has come out and said that you can wear guardian caps in games. I think I was watching the NFL Network this week, and they were showing some stuff from Chargers camp, and some of the guys in Chargers camp were actually wearing the guardian cap, and it looked like the actual helmet. I mean, it had the logo on the side and all of that kind of stuff. Geno Smith of the Seahawks tells ProFootballTalk.com that he is considering wearing a guardian cap this year. I think we're going to see it, and I think we're going to see a lot more of it going forward. And if the NFL gets their way and we end up going to a, where are we going? 18 games?
Yep.
18-game regular season? 19-game regular season? 20-game regular season? Wherever this thing ends up at, player safety is going to be a bigger deal. I think you're going to see more and more guardian caps out there. But
you don't want to be the first guy to do it, though. You know the first guy is going to get so much so much hell from his teammates, from opponents. Like, really? You got to wear that? Soft.
First time I ever saw it was at the high school level. I mean, and I'm sure it had been around other places. First time I ever saw it in person was at a high school practice, and it was with a couple of kids that had had concussions and had come out of concussion protocol, so they were able to return back to play. But, you know, they didn't wear them on game day. They would go through pregame drills with them on, but when they came back out of the locker room, you know, for the kickoff, the kids left them in the locker room. So didn't see them wear them in a game. But now I have been to some scrimmages at the high school level where you see it quite. I mean, it's becoming more and more common than what it was. Like I say, first time I saw it was, I don't know, what, 10 years ago? So it's become a lot more common now over the last decade. Our guy Dave Cohen, he is the play-by-play voice of the Georgia State Panthers. Dave's going to join us. We'll talk a little college football, talk a little bit about those Georgia State Panthers. We'll get to that coming up in just a minute. Dave and I both share a love of the band Kiss. So he and I, we probably could have done the entire show together just talking Kiss, but we spared you that. Instead, we talk a little football. Get Dave's thoughts on what's going on around college sports as well, because we talk about the changes in the NFL this year. Man, there's a bunch of changes happening in college football, too. We'll get his thoughts on that and a lot more. Stay with us. Chris Goforth in on this Sunday. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.